general when they're not being paid for by, you know, the U.S. government to spy on people. But those folks that go and actually show vulnerabilities in people's supposedly secure systems actually do a bit of a service. If they don't do anything damaging, but show that there are holes that people who would want to do something devious.
Yeah, good point. Unless you're the ones with the phishing emails, but that's pretty much blocked these days with the latest browsers. But,
you know, right, still, right. You know, but, you know, it's really interesting. You know, there have been so many hackers who have been jailed for doing not necessarily malicious things, but actually cracking into people's systems and, you know, leaving little messages saying, ha, 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 you have a hole. And after they do jail time and they get out, many of these guys end up being hired by internet security companies to be, you know, research guys, to be advisors, because they have the knack of finding where the holes are.
And, you know, I guess they're worth $30 billion over 5 years, these super hackers.
Yeah, and
because,
so,
you know, I can't imagine the Air Force being able to pull hacking out of its recruit pool, because I don't think anybody that wants to be a hacker is going to put up with 8 weeks of pure and utter mind-numbing, soul-stealing BS in basic training. But
yeah,
I'm crazy.
No, Bob, me, dude. Bob, they won't have to go through any of that. No, because they know that they're not the types. They're just going to be hired on. They're just, you know, they're
yeah,
they won't
contractors.
Be basic
contractors.
Yeah, they're contractors.
I know.
You
hey,
know,
guys.
So, I mean, if. Yeah.
You've got a show to do, John.
Okay. I'll give.
Peter, thank you.
Thanks. I had a great time. I think we've done a bang up job for a Wednesday night on the Head On Radio Network, and I know John's going to continue.
Well, I
got to
tell you what, we just beat the living bejesus out of the Fox Red Eye. I know that.
I know we did. We crucified him.
All right. So, Peter, sweet dreams. John, we'll see you on the other side. And in the meantime, here's the late great Lowell George reminding you to.
This is a top to you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
oh,
11,
and most
11,
of the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Well, welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366. Or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, everybody, welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a Wednesday night or Thursday morning or Thursday afternoon, all depending on where you reside on this beautiful blue marble, such that it still is. Welcome to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. And boy, that was an unexpected couple of directions for the horn section there in the past hour. We went all kind of PA and tech porn. It, very bizarre. but you know, it's what it is. It's a free form kind of thing. And I'm really happy to hear that Rick Goodner is going to return this weekend. I've missed his program, and it's going to be really good to have him back into things, because his Rangers are missing just some great commentary and some great music, and really glad to have you back, Rick. It's a fantastic thing, and I'm curious about this other Rick guy that we've got on Saturdays as well. Have to tune in Saturday night, all before Billy Shears. And speaking of Billy Shears, tomorrow night we'll have part two of the Steve Winwood series, which should be quite good, because part one was excellent. And on the music vibe, I was looking for a track of the day thing, and I'm looking through the big drive of all the music, and I fell to an old friend last night, and I'm going to fall to an old friend tonight. I haven't played anything from the Tea Party in quite a while. And, remind those folks in America of probably the greatest band that America's never heard of. Great Canadian trio. Unfortunately, no longer together. I've heard rumors that they may reform. But this is one of those bands that has virtually everything that I love. Strangely tuned guitars, both acoustic and electric. Both pieces that I've got for today are mostly acoustic bits. Strangely tuned guitars, great percussion, and vocals sung by a guy that sounds like a guy. And Mr. Jeff Martin is just a wonder, and he's out doing solo stuff these days, which I have to get my hands on. He's got to be one of the most talented and unique guitar players in modern rock music. This is one of those bands that somewhat defies categorization just because of all the Eastern influence. And Jeff can play up to, 30 instruments in a single concert. Ouds, sitars, tenor guitars, harp guitars, mandolins. It just goes on and on and on and on and on. He does some of that funky stuff of the violin bow on the Les Paul and all that kind of thing. It's just great creative stuff. And because Jeff Martin really does not care for the American record industry. So he made a conscious decision that he really didn't care about the American market, which, seems a little bit insane, because the American market can make any band a huge amount of money. But he just didn't want to deal with the American media and all of that, and so he didn't. And they had a good long career And unfortunately, after the death of their tour manager, it seemed that the glue that held them together was no longer there, and hence the Tea Party went by the ways of history. So I've got two tracks here from two different records, and I guess I'll do them in somewhat chronological order here. Off of the debut album, Edges of Twilight, which I love this record. It's just huge. But this is one of the most guitar.
Roll it, Bob.
Decided to hold on to all that you lost. When you decided to hold on to all that you lost, all this is nothing if she comes and tears you apart. All this is nothing if you hold the key to her heart. If you decided to change what you thought was your way, this new way will take you to her and to Midsummer Day. All this is nothing if she comes and tears you apart. All this is nothing if you hold the key to her heart.
is it about trios that just create such amazing power and space? You look at bands like The Police, like Rush, and what a three-piece is able to do just always blows me away, that you can get such an amazing noise out of three people. I think it's unique to that format. I think it's because each musician doesn't have to compete with another for the spot in the mix, so it's up to them to create their section of what's going on all on their own, and it's a real talent. Before I go and play the second track, our pop culture correspondent David from Maine is on the line. How you going, David? Welcome to the program.
Good evening. I just thought I'd add a few things real quickly. First thing is one of the pieces of software that a lot of people might want to use is something called Peer Guardian. I mentioned it before on the show, but just in case people haven't heard about it, you can Google it, or you just go to phoenixlabs.org, I believe, and you'll come up with it. What Peer Guardian does is when you surf websites, it immediately puts a block list on the people that are trying to get into your computer. So, say you go on a film site and you're looking at films, not to download, of course, and you're looking at some music, not to download, of course, just looking, and you go on the site and all of a sudden it shows that you're getting a IP from MPAA trying to look in your computer, or one from the Homeland Security or whatever. What it does is it just those addresses that are trying to infiltrate into your computer, they instantly get blocked, and you're able to see where the addresses are coming from as well.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Peer Guardian. I don't actually have it installed at the moment, but I've used it before, and it's a rather amazing thing when you suddenly see that, you know, wow, the record label's checking on me. Interesting. Homeland Security's checking on me. Interesting. You know, why do they care?
Well, they need something to do for their paycheck.
By the way, I went.
You can only play Minesweep or so much.
Yeah, this is true. I went and grabbed that new 9-inch Nails the other day, by the way.
Nice.
It's intense. It's really intense. Some great lyrics. There's that one great lyric about control through fear. I can't remember which track it is. But fantastic album. And they've really maximized the whole idea of the computer-based music playback, because just like the Saul Williams record, the PDF images are tied into the track. So as you play it, like in Windows Media Player, the corresponding image for the song comes up and the lyrics come up as you play it, which I just think is amazing, which is just really handy when you listen to something for the first time. You can kind of, you know, catch lyrics without having to disregard other aspects of the mix, you know, as you focus on things. You know, you can read, that's what this is about. But it really, really good record. I still have to go and get Ghosts 1. I've heard such great things about that, and I still need to hear that one.
Yeah, that's a long list in that one. Yeah, I was going to say, also on the Nine Inch Nails thing, the images that they, in case a lot of people don't realize this who are Nine Inch Nails fans, those images and tie into something bigger, which is it goes back to the role playing marketing game that Trent started a long time ago with, or about a year ago with Year Zero, and a lot of people are finding codes in the pictures and stuff. And if you go to Echoing the Sound, which is a fan site for Nine Inch Nails, a lot of these people are breaking codes as we speak. So there's always something inside the images that he's put there for a reason, and it's leading to something else, whether it's a tour or whatever his next multimedia project is. He's always giving people hints, but not giving them the code ring, so to speak. They have to make that on their own.
Well, you know, it's one of the things that I think is so great about what, you know, Trent and some other people are doing is the idea that, you know, the album project is more than the music, even though the music is the focus. And, you know, just putting more thought into things. I mean, we've gone off on the way Tool does this and other bands do it. And I really think it's a groovy thing. That new Nine Inch Nails is amazingly, he's really kind of gone in this really heavily industrial, you know, very square wave synthy sound thing where, he's really creating a thumbprint with a lot of those sounds. And any album with Josh Freese playing drums is going to just kick. Because I reckon Josh Freese is one of the greatest hired hand drummers that walks the planet. You know, he's played on the Perfect Circle stuff. He also has done some of the Queens of the Stone Age stuff. He's just an amazing drummer. Great feel, great time. And he must be like the Steve Gadd of hard rock and industrial, because I get the impression that he's a one-take Charlie. He just kind of comes in and hammers it and nails it and says, okay, I'm done. You guys can now go to work.
I'd agree with you there. The other thing that I wanted to mention was another a piece of software, which is it's called Spokio. Have you heard about
that? Heard of that one. No.
Spokio searches your friends' blogs and photos across social networks, so you don't have to visit hundreds of websites one by one. It's kind of controversial, but at the same time, it's really helpful for a lot of people who want to stalk your friends, I guess. if you want to find out where someone's coming from, you just log on to Spokio.com and you can set yourself up, and you can go from network to network just by going in the search engine. It's Spokio.
I think actually you sent this. Did you post this at the forum a couple of weeks ago?
I don't know. Probably. I don't think so. Probably was a different one.
Right.
The buzz on this one is because of the controversy it involves of being able to. You could reverse engineer it. You could reverse engineer something like this and do some harm to some people, I would imagine. So a lot of people are kind of leery on promoting this, but I don't know. I say if it helps you track down people that you're interested in from a casual liking, then hey, why not? If it helps you track down a lot of sites and it saves you a lot of time too, because I guess that's what the 21st century is really about. It's not about discovering the inner vortex of the mind. It's about managing your time.
Yeah, this is true. And I'd be curious to look and see if they're actually just pulling the stuff off of, you know, XML feeds and whatnot. And if that's the case, then it's pretty harmless because you're already publishing the content and it's just aggregating it in some sort of organized fashion. I'd be curious to know what goes on under the hood with something like that.
The other thing I wanted to make aware of was there's this website called Can We Ask, and it's a GOP type of stealth website, but they're not very smart because the videos that they link to go back to their YouTube page, which then go to their blogs or whatever they're associated with. Like one goes to, but they act like they're normal people. So they don't say their full names, and they don't say what they're associated with. They act like they're just, hey, my name is Robert, but really it's Robert Bluey of the Heritage Foundation.
Oh, right.
Or, hey, my name is, I'm not making this up, people, so don't think I'm racist. Hey, my name is Ali Akbar. The guy's name was Ali Akbar, and he works for the GOP. I can't make that up. And I went to his blog, and I was like, who the hell is this guy? and then come to find out, you know, he's a GOP loyalist and he really wants to get in that circle for God knows whatever reason. And then, you know, there's a guy who says, oh, I'm concerned about small businesses. And then you find out, and this guy is from Tech Pundit, another GOP favorite. So that site, if people aren't aware of, you can find out a lot of these stealth insiders, because they're showing their faces and they're not very smart when it comes to, sorry people who are listening right now, but you're not very smart when it comes to, because they're linking their YouTube videos exactly back to, which hyperlinks back to their blogs. So, you know, it's kind of interesting finding out who these people get at first hand. Like the Robert Bluey thing, he's been on C-SPAN for a while. He has his own heritage, cult-like type political worldviews, and it's an interesting site they're just trying to make go viral. But really, it really started with a lot of these informants and insiders. So, you know, that to me is something that I don't think a lot of people pay enough attention to. There are with video now, and the fact that we have YouTube, one thing that people should really pay attention to is where these YouTube videos come from, and the addresses of where they end up at, whatever blog or whatever think tank they're associated with. Because it just seems so many people don't take the steps to cover up their tracks, which probably has to do with a lot of laziness and just a lot of sloppiness on their part.
Yeah, there's definitely a fair amount of that to go around. And, you know, it is taking advantage. It's actually taking advantage of other people's laziness, making them feel safe in being lazy themselves.
Yeah. And, the other thing I wanted to mention was the fact that right now, as there is a... I thought you might find this interesting. It has to do with the environment. It's amusing and funny at the same time, but it's a person known to Ewok, Earth Warriors Are Okay, formerly the Twin Cities Eco Prisoner Support Committee. And this was his story. As I was biking back from court, my phone rang. I let it go to answering machine and checked it when I was off my bike. It was the police officer who I talked to about my graffiti. It said something like, "This isn't graffiti-related, but I need your help with something. You're not in trouble. Give me a call." I give him a call, something like this. "I'd like to meet with you today. It's not about graffiti. I'm not going to rat anyone out. What do you want?" Don't really know why I said that. I was nervous, I suppose. 20 minutes of your time. "Where do you want to meet?" "I don't know, Eric. Where do you want to meet? And can you tell me what this is about?" "I'll explain it when we meet. How about espresso?" "Sure." "When's good? How about 12:30? So now I'm antsy and confused. I get there 15 minutes earlier, and then he comes a bit late. He says, "This is my partner." And he referred to the woman next to him. They both got coffee, leaving me in my shaky, dumbfounded mental state even longer. Then we sat down, and she flashes an FBI badge. Seeing my nerves, they reassured me again that I was safe and not guilty of anything. Then for 20 minutes, they flatter me about how my personality and appearance are perfect matches for what is required in some espionage dealio. They wanted me to crash vegan potluck parties and get into the inner circle of terrorists, because supposedly terrorists are trusting, and I'm trusting, easygoing, funny, and a bunch of other flattery. Every time they said vegan potluck, I chuckled, but their faces showed they weren't kidding. They said vegan potluck half a dozen times. They really feared vegans and their violent conspiracies to blow up buildings and protest the Republican National Convention. So after 20 minutes... So after 20 minutes of bewildering suck-ups, they ask me if I'm in. They say there's compensation if I assist in someone's arrest. I say, I'll pass. She says, "That was the fastest anyone has ever rejected me." And then tried for 10 more minutes to get me to change my mind before saying, "Really? Think about it. We could really use you." Then she gave me a business card. On the back, she wrote me her cell phone number. I said, "You have very legible handwriting." And they both had themselves a very hearty laugh. "Call if you change your mind. Don't tell any of your friends about this, and don't show anyone this card." We said our goodbyes, and I haven't heard from either of them since. And then he proceeds to give the people what was on the business card. all their information, their internet, their email, the office, the cell, the fax, their full names, and exactly what their positions are. So I don't think they'll be too happy when they get some calls from that.
No. And as you're telling me the story, I'm just sitting there thinking of, you know, that episode of The Simpsons Gone Wrong, you know, you don't make friends with salad. The idea that people who decide to not eat flesh are somehow associated as being violent terrorists is just ludicrous. It's just ludicrous. You know, it's the same idea as the Chinese trying to, you know, trying to espouse things about the violent Buddhist monks. You know, it just is such an oxymoron. It makes absolutely no sense. But the fact, you know, I can just picture, Mulder and Scully coming up to this guy going, "You're just what we like. You know, you're a really cool guy, and we could use your help." And you know, this guy just, I would have been uncontrollably laughing and shaking in my boots all at the same time. I couldn't have taken any of it seriously. That's just madness. But it just shows you, you know, who exactly is the enemy, David? Who is this enemy where we have to go and spy on, you know, political activist groups who are, you know, trying to end a war? You know, what was it? The Quakers were spied on. You know, this is just more of this insanity. I just don't get where it comes from, man.
Targets.
Targets
are almost like potential investments now. Any kind of target that they have for a mark or something, or that looks like that could be where they spend some time in a case. I'm not saying they necessarily do this to do that, but it sounds similar, doesn't it, to the war on drugs, where they'll just spend time on something because of the money that they're getting paid for, and then they just need something to fill up their dossier on. you know, this brings me to another thing, which was the War Inc. movie. I actually saw that. I'm not going to say if I saw it in the theaters or not.
Yeah. Very good.
Here's my criticism with it, and I think this is probably the result of Hollywood and the film studios and probably a director having a little bit of the jitters at the same time. So when you watch the film, have you seen it, John?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Well, when you watch the film,
how.
I was intrigued by the concept and I was interested by the concept, but to me, where it falters is when they use the subplot for Hilary Duff, and then they kind of had like that twist soap opera at end type ending at the end. I think it kind of dilutes the message a little bit. And I
had a similar feeling, to be honest. I had a similar feeling, but then, you know, it was supposed to be a bit of a comedy with I wasn't quite sure which was supposed to be the plot and which was supposed to be the subplot.
I think I know what happened in a situation like that. I think that's one of those cases where they have these guys in Hollywood. They bring them in. They're called script doctors. And they don't get their name on the credits or anything. What they do is they do surgery on the script, and basically they get paid loads and loads of money. A lot of script doctors are known to be really reclusive and a little bit erratic because of the pressure of the timeline that they're. That's why they get the big bucks, because of it. Someone will give them a script and say, "I need it by Wednesday." And they need to figure out how they're going to rework it and rewrite it. It's like a common practice in the industry. If the studios are going to pass on it, they'll have to take it to the script doctor. So I think there was a little bit of script doctoring with the ending, because it just didn't sit right with me. I mean, it's like it was rolling. You know what I mean? It was rolling. We're talking about the war. We're doing a satire akin to how I stopped worrying about the bomb, kind of. Kind of. And it's a little bit of the Mel Brooks and all of that. And then, you know, the ending to me was the whole subplot with a. I'm not going to give anything away, but with the ending, it just seemed to me it just seemed like it was tacked on, really.
The only thing that I will give Hillary Duff credit for, because I didn't actually snap to who it was until the credits, and it's just because I wasn't being observant. But I actually have to give her credit. I thought, you know, whether the vehicle was useful to the film or not, I thought she did a pretty damn good job of portraying the character that they had created. And whether the vehicle was effective or not.
Yeah.
I did kind of get that bit of it. And I have to say I was rather impressed with the performance itself. Whether it actually worked in the context of the film the way that I would have liked to is a completely other story.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that you know, that's the problem, and I don't think people really understand that. They'll criticize, and this is why I'm not criticizing the director at all. And this is why I'm only looking at the film from an objective standpoint. And this is why I think people do not understand why it happens that a lot of these films turn out that way. It's not because they necessarily want to mess with you or they want to F with you and say, ha ha, we took your money. Because you got an investment in it. And you got to give that popcorn to it. Otherwise, they're not going to greenlight it.
Yeah, and, you know, brain fart. What's his name who wrote it and started it? You know, it did have the feel of one of his films, you know, similar to High Fidelity. You know, there was the way the language flowed and the dialogue kind of moved, you know, there was something very familiar in there. So it was in style, you know, and so you know it's kind of like Monty Python. Regardless of the subject matter that they do, there's a certain stylistic thing that you expect because of who's doing it, and you know. Similar situation with this film. I'm actually really more curious about seeing this new Iron Man film. When you talk about having subplots and the whole contractor situation, that the reviews I've heard about that film are very interesting because they didn't even have a script when they started filming. And if they had actually had the subplot, the film probably would never have been made.
You know, I was really impressed with Iron Man, and I was it gives me a little bit more faith in what Marvel's going to do with Incredible Hulk with Ed Norton. I mean, wow. I mean, that guy.
Interesting choice.
If you've seen American History X, you know what I'm talking about.
Great film. Great film.
I mean, if you see anything with Ed Norton in it, you know what I'm talking about. So, or like 25th Hour.
I haven't seen that one, but American History X is probably one of my top films of the last decade, if it's still less than 10 years old. It's a great film, absolutely fantastic film. But I got a few things I want to get to, mate, before we get out of here. I still have another Tea Party track to get into and a couple of things, so I'm gonna let you go. But it's always good to talk to you, and I think I should be reinstalling Peer Guardian. It's probably a good thing you've reminded me of.
Might be a good thing. And one more thing, the actual date for Al Green has been delayed. It's now May 27th, so you guys have time to pre-order it. Lay it down. May 27th.
You're a riot, man. You're hysterical. Have a great night, mate. It's always good to talk to you, and we'll speak to you sometime soon.
All right, later.
All right, mate. Okay. Back to the music. Boy, I'm not going to cover much tonight, but that's all right. Always love talking to David about whatever he feels like ringing up about. Now, when I can't even read my own notes. I am such a knob sometimes. When the first track that I played today, we played Midsummer Day, and I said that that was off Edges of Twilight. No, it's not. It's actually off of an album called Splendor Solace. But the track I'm about to play now is off of Edges of Twilight, the debut Tea Party album. And just, I love this band, you know. I just absolutely love this band. There's everything that's good about music appears with this band. And I have had the pleasure of seeing them live once, and it's still one of the most amazing shows I've ever seen. And I still remember when Jeff came out with the Oud the first time, and they had this very kind of, I think it wasn't an accident, the work light for the guitar tech would cast a shadow of Jeff on the side of the stage when he'd go and get the next instrument. And the shadow, you could see him holding the Oud, and the entire audience just started to applaud. And I love that, you know. It proves that people don't need to be spoon-fed formula music. You know, here's a whole bunch of folks spanning, you know, a couple of generations, and they all actually know what an Oud is. not everything has to be played on a six-string guitar. But this track has nothing to do with an Oud, however. This is a great track. Shadows on the Mountainside, another great bit of acoustic guitar work, another one that Scott noodles on when he comes over here and always frustrates me to no end, just as a guitar player. But this one's actually off of the debut album. Edges of Twilight, Shadows on the Mountainside. Roll it, Bob.
Thank you.
finger-picking magic. Just finger-picking magic. And that mandocello, as Bob refers, yeah, the mandolin for us fat finger types. It's not exactly that, Bob, but it does serve that purpose. But you know, it's just a lower registered mandolin, same vibe. I've actually lusted after having one of those for many years because, you know, I don't even have the biggest fingers in the world, and I struggle with a mandolin. I reckon it's one of the trickier things to play. Now, getting on to a few things that I had lined up for tonight, and I'll at least get the lead story out. Now, I've been on a little bit of a Monsanto thing recently, haven't I? There's a great piece at Celsius. Thank you, Gene, for sending this to me. CELSIAS.com. You can find a link to this particular post on today's show post on the blog. And we are unpaid lab rats. You are coming to understand this, right? We are unpaid lab rats for outfits like Monsanto. This piece here by Jeffrey Smith, executive director of the Institute of Responsible Technology and author of the highly acclaimed Seeds of Deception and Genetic Roulette. Genetically modified foods are inherently unsafe, and current safety assessments are not competent to protect us from or even identify most dangers. Overwhelming evidence to support this conclusion is now compiled in the book Genetic Roulette. The documented health risks of genetically engineered foods, which presents an abundance of adverse findings and theoretical risks associated with GM foods. The book documents lab animals with damage to virtually every system. They studied thousands of sick, sterile, or dead livestock, and people around the world who have traced toxic or allergic reactions to eating GM products. From breathing GM pollen or touching GM crops at harvest. So, like, actually harvesting it is a danger. Oh, yeah, it's safe! We bought the study, falsified the results. So, just trust us, it's safe. Bite me. it also exposes many incorrect assumptions that were used to support GM approvals. This article excerpt from the book summarizes some of the findings related to allergic and immune responses, GM soy and allergies. Soy allergies jumped 50% in the UK just after GM soy was introduced. If GM soy was the cause, it may be due to several things. The GM protein that makes Roundup Ready soy resistant to the herbicide does not have a history of safe use in humans and may be an allergen. In fact, sections of its amino acid sequence are identical to known allergens. A portion of the transgene from ingested GM soybeans, along with the promoter that switches it on, transfers into human gut bacteria during ingestion. The fact that the transformed bacteria survives the application from Roundup's active ingredient, glyphosate, suggests that the transgene continues to produce the Roundup Ready protein. If true, then long after people stop eating GM soy, they might be constantly exposed to its potentially allergenic protein, which is being created within their gut. This protein may be made more allergenic due to its misfolding, attached molecular change, or rearrangement of the unstable transgenes. But there is sufficient data to support or rule out these possibilities. You know, why is this stuff not just screamed to the rooftops? I'll tell you why. Because the money that Monsanto makes is more important in this world than the damage that these crops do to the actual people that consume them. It's all about bloody profit. It's disgusting. And I mean, you know, the stories from the farmers who never had any, never bought any GM seed in their life, and their crops end up becoming cross-pollinated, suddenly have to patent rights. I mean, this is just all so ass backwards. It's unbelievable. Continues on saying, studies suggest that the GM transformation process may have increased natural allergens in soybeans. The level of one known allergen, trypsin inhibitor, was 27% higher in raw GM soy varieties. More worrisome, it was as much as sevenfold higher in cooked GM soy compared to cooked non-GM soy. Not only is this higher amount potentially harmful, the finding also suggests that the trypsin inhibitor in GM soy might be more heat stable and therefore even more allergenic than the natural variety. It's also possible that the changes in GM soy DNA may produce new allergens. Although there have never been any exhaustive analysis of the proteins or natural products in GM soy, unpredicted changes in the DNA were discovered. A mutated section of soy DNA was found near the transgene, which may contribute to some unpredicted effects. Moreover, between this scrambled DNA and the transgene is an extra transgene fragment, not discovered until years after soy was on the market. The RNA produced is completely unexpected. It combines material from all three sections, the full-length transgene, the transgene fragment, and the mutated DNA sequence. The RNA is then further processed into four different variations, which might lead to the production of some known allergen. Now, there was just actually coverage here in Australia the other day about the amazing increase in allergies across Australia. And they have this doctor on saying, you know, it's blaming it on the Western lifestyle. But it couldn't be, they couldn't really get him to be any more specific. And they said, you know, because food content really hasn't changed. And I'm sitting there thinking, they're not even talking about all the GM crap that has come into virtually, you know, a huge proportion of the commercial food products that are available for us to purchase across this world. Now, New South Wales has just allowed the first genetically modified rapeseed stock to be planted in Australia. And so Australia has officially popped the cork off the bottle, the genie's out. You can never return. You know, I've said it before, one of the most beautiful things about Australia is the fact that it's an island nation and has a unique position in this world to actually isolate itself from things like GM crops. I mean, our quarantine in this country is absolutely just fanatic to try and protect this absolutely unique ecosystem. You know, the wildlife and the plant life in this country are like things you'll never see anywhere else. You'll never see anywhere else. You know, there are plants around here that kind of remind you of artist renditions of prehistoric plant life. You know. And you walk by some of these things, like, you know, Gymea lilies. They're huge. They're amazing. They can be meters tall. And you just kind of look up, and you're like a dwarf compared to these things. And they, you know, there's such a serious stance on trying to protect all that. But because Monsanto comes in and talks about the money, uses their falsified claims, convinces the New South Wales government, our wonderful, corrupt, mafioso, soprano mob that runs this state, obviously went, oh, you're offering us money? Sure, we'll take that. There's not a bribe or a payoff that we wouldn't take. So the Australian nest has now officially been soiled. But what's kind of interesting when it comes to this is Australian law, and there may be some testing of this, may for the first time counter the way the whole copyright protection nonsense has been dealt with in courts. there is discussion that they may actually side with the non-GM farmers if their seed stock is cross-pollinated, which is how it should be. You know, the farmer who didn't want this, who has their seed stock that they save every year infected by, you know, this mutant strain of whatever the crop is, never to be the same again, they are the victims in this. It's not Monsanto. It's these farmers that want nothing to do with it, but then by no fault or choice of their own end up being screwed into having to pay royalties for something that they don't want. So maybe it'll be interesting to see how that fight comes down. I'll be watching that very closely. Because, you know, it'll be a few months. So they've just recently planted winter crops. So we'll see what happens when harvest time comes around and then the next growing season. And we'll see how fast these mutant, man-made mutant crops end up infiltrating the rest of the country. You know, what about the states that didn't buy into this? When it goes blowing over the borders into Victoria or South Australia, places where it's still illegal to actually grow GM crops. We've just opened up a huge can of holy crap, what a mess. But, you know, for years, you know, there have been thoughtful people warning us about the risks of these kind of crops. Not even to mention the moral quandaries and the legal quandaries, but just as far as human health and the planet's health. And we're seeing, obviously, here, you know, could this actually be the cause for all the increased asthma in this country, which is like a plague with children in Australia? It's amazing. It's like every third family has a kid with asthma, and not light asthma. We're talking serious asthma, life threatening asthma. Something I'd never seen before until I moved here. You know, we've got two national diseases. We have asthma and melanoma. The melanoma I can deal with. You know, this is the sunniest, hottest place on the planet. But the GM crop stuff, we can control that. We shouldn't be doing it. And all the claims that they make are so false. It's all about money and profit. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So check, go to the blog. There's so much more in this piece, and I looks like this book is rather interesting. What the hell is it called again? Genetic Roulette, which I think is I think that just those two words sum it up unbelievably well. By Jeffrey M. Smith, and I've come across his name before, and his book Seeds of Deception, it was a big hit amongst those that care to actually know about what this stuff does, as opposed to just swallowing the corporate